This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligny Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
All right, bring it in, folks. It's time to talk about the St. Louis Cardinals. They are the real deal, folks. I don't think this we've gone long enough. Now, it's Flag Day is Sunday. I'm actually going to ask Klaibs if he can come on the show Sunday, Sports on a Sunday Morning, because it is officially Flag Day, and then he will make the official determination if the Cardinals are for real. If you're not familiar with this, Mike Claiborne, through most of his radio career, has determined Flag Day as the day that you know what your team is. We are getting to that point. The Cardinals last night put it on the Mets early. And then Chris finished them off 7-0. The question is this real? Is this ahead of schedule? Is this a fluke? I don't know that it's the latter. I think it is the former. I think it is real and it is ahead of schedule. I think this is a good team.
Well, with all due respect to our friend Mike Claiborne, I don't think we need another 5 days. I think you pretty much, and this is what the Cardinals were 10 days ago, is about what they are now, right? Even though they have climb the standings a bit, they've been playing about like this for 2 months. I think you only need 2 months of the season to know what your team is, and I am more than comfortable feeling like I think what we're seeing from them is close to what they actually are. That doesn't mean they're going to secure a wild card spot, but I think you know what kind of team they are. I think they're a decent pitching staff. They are a top to bottom. I think they're decent. Offensively, they score enough runs, and they are finally above that 500, the sea level when it comes to run differential. They are finally over that after winning 7-0 last night in New York. So this is what I think they are. And I think in the National League, it could be good enough to end up with a wild card. The only thing is there are still some pretty good teams that haven't quite hit their stride yet. I think the Padres, who are tied for that third wild card right now, I think they're a much better team than what we've seen so far. They're only a couple of games over 500. I still think this Mets team is better than they have been playing. But you look at the rest of the National League, and it's kind of open. There's no real team, with the exception of the Dodgers. Maybe I should just talk strictly wild card here. Of all the wild card contenders, there aren't a whole lot of teams that you're terribly afraid of, except for the Padres and maybe the Cubs, who I don't think are playing to their potential yet either.
Phillies.
They're there, though. They're already.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean that are coming at you?
Yeah. And so to me, that's kind of I don't have a lot of concern about the rest of the National League, with the couple of exceptions like the ones I just mentioned. But they are going to be, I think, in September, still at least in the wild card conversation. It appears the Brewers are going to win this division. I mean, they just do it every year, and they haven't given us reason to think otherwise, and they're not giving us reason to think otherwise this season either. So I am totally on board with the idea that this will be the Cardinals, a wild card contender for most of the year, if not all the way until the final series.
There's a chance that by the end of today, the Cardinals could be closer to the Brewers than they are the Cubs, the Reds, the Pirates, etc. The Cardinals are 4.5 games out in the division. The Cubs and Pirates are 8 back. And yeah, the Reds, who actually did win finally yesterday, are 9.5 back. The Brewers are 4.5 in front of the field, but it's a two-team race at the moment, with the Cardinals trying to inch a little closer tonight. The Brewers will take on the A's, who they lost to last night. The Cubs visit the Rockies. The Reds will be taking on the Padres once again. And the Pirates have the Dodgers. So the NL Central is busy, and a lot of teams on the road, and this is very interesting at the moment. Andre Pallante is the starter tonight. He's 6-4 with a 3.96 ERA. He actually has better numbers than Dustin May does. And May, of course, didn't get a lot of run support, but yesterday he certainly did, and he looked dynamite. Pallante taking on the Mets tonight for a 6-10 start. and a 5:15 pregame, and who knows? I mean, this Cardinals team, they made a transaction yesterday official that was very impactful. Mm-hmm. They shipped Victor Scott, who they love. He's a great guy, and they all appreciate him. He's one of the great teammates, but he wasn't getting the job done. He was hitting 194. He goes to Memphis, and he may be there a while because Nathan Church jumps in and goes 3-for-4, makes a basket catch adjusting to the wind out in center field, and scores a run. And Church in the 9 spot, a very important spot in the lineup, as it turns out. He had his first hit in the 3rd inning, and he got knocked in by J.J. Weatherholt, who had a 2-run hit. And the other guy who's come alive here, we all know about Walker, and he's getting all-star attention. We all know about Weatherholt. He gets tons of national attention. Ivan Herrera is one of the great hitters on this team. He slaughters left-handed pitching. And I'll tell you, man, the guy who's been going all year, just plugging right along, is Alec Burleson. He's mm-hmm. taken over the first base job.
He's an X on this team.
Boy, is he good. Yeah. I mean, he had it again yesterday, a two-run homer, a 3-RBI day. The guy's creeping up on a 300 batting average right now. He looks great. And, Chris, he has 9 home runs, 46 RBIs. He's hitting, I do believe, 294, if my memory serves. Yesterday, he has another big day with 2 more hits, and that is 293 for Burleson, slacker. 2-for-5, 3 RBIs and a run score. This has been a fun run for Alec Burleson. I'm not putting him in the All-Star game by any stretch. I'm just telling you, he is one of the more valuable players on this team.
No, but if you want to talk about an All-Star, the guy on this roster that right now is playing like one is the guy who hits right behind him predominantly, and that's Jordan Walker. And just having this conversation about him as we sit here in the process of All-Star voting, you got a couple of weeks still that you can go to Cardinals.com and vote. I think it's the 25th, right? Is that the last day of All-Star voting? There's a really good chance he gets in. And what an incredible turn of events to be where we are now, where you had people who, Cardinals fans, who had felt like, and this I know happens with a lot of fan bases, that they think they know about a player way before we really do know about a player. Like, they get to a point where they've seen enough, you know? Yeah. Hey, this is one bad year. I've seen enough of this guy. Mm-hmm. We're done with this guy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes a little longer for certain players. Sometimes it'll take 3-4 years for a guy to really start to mature a bit. But considering where we were with him, complete uncertainty, complete unknown, having no clue whether or not he would figure anything out, to now him being firmly in an All-Star game conversation, and not like a, well, if the voting goes right, maybe we can make something work. I don't know. Maybe. No, he's right now playing All-Star caliber baseball, and he could end up being that. This is a fantastic turn of events for him.
It is. And for this baseball team, which the only flaw that I see is a lack of depth in starting rotation. If they were to lose a pitcher, or a pitcher goes sideways, they could be in some trouble. But here comes Hunter Dobbins. He's going to start tomorrow. So now you have 6 starters that you can lean on. That's a very good development. Hopefully that holds for the Cardinals. If that holds, folks, I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, you could add, of course, Nolan Gorman at third base is a hole right there, because he's not spectacular at any really thing that he's doing. They're just hanging with him because they know what they saw back in 23.
Yep.
But, you know, that's really it. I mean, they've got a team here. We'll see.
The question is, as we hit the break, the question is, what are the Cardinals? Do we know? And I think 2 months into the season, plus, we know exactly who they are. A team that's going to play a lot of tight games. They don't have a high margin for error, but they can be a wild card contender through the end of the season. Doesn't mean they'll win, but I think we're going to be talking about possible playoffs for them for most of 2026.
And as you know, as the pitching goes, they go. But man, it is fun. So far, so good. We keep saying that, like, well, it's only May 10th. Now it's June 10th. Mm-hmm. And here they are, right in there. We're going to take a break. When we come back, U.S. Senator Eric Schmidt is going to join us. He has been pushing very strongly legislation to clean up college sports, for lack of a better word. And secondly, and probably first on his mind at the moment, he has a congressional baseball game to attend to, and he might be the best hitter on the Republican side. We're going to talk to U.S. Senator Eric Schmidt coming up next.
A triple by Eric Schmidt there.
Runner goes. Schmidt is in easily at second.
GOP already leading 3-0. Gets a hold of that one. Rocket down the left field line.
My goodness. The highlight reel, U.S. Senator Eric Schmidt, the congressional baseball game. I'm scrambling here looking for the lineups. Usually for these baseball games, we get the scoop. It just so happens that we have the senator on the Gas House Gang right now. Where are you hitting in the order today, Senator?
It got me in the two hole, Tom. It got me in the two hole. Maybe it's the La Russa theory. You know, you put the guy you want in the two hole. And then next year, if we get to share on the squad, I want to make sure Teixeira is in the three hole, and I'll stay in the two hole.
Oh yeah, had, you said that last time. Teixeira, you got a shot at Teixeira here.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That'd be kind of wild, actually. But yeah, no, they've hit fourth and then settled in second the last 2 years, so it's a good spot in the lineup.
I think that this is good for everybody, wouldn't you say? I'll talk about where the money goes and how you're raising money for charity, but just the overarching thing here from a personal standpoint is baseball's good for people. You know, Washington is a city, an area where political views are tossed back and forth through the media, through various channels. There's a lot of stress, intensity. Is this a way for both sides to unwind and have a good time?
It is. And I've always, you know, for me as a fan or as a participant, sports is meant a lot to me personally, and I think it's a way for people to come together. I mean, when I'm rooting for the Cardinals and Bush, I don't care who somebody, you know, voted for next to me or what their, you know, their faith background is. I mean, we're rooting for the same team, and I think that we need more of that, you know, in our country right now. So sports have always brought people together, and tonight in Washington, you know, there's plenty of things for us to fight about during the day, I guess, but tonight we'll gather and raise money for a great cause under the lights at Nats Park.
Is it, you know, now being in that position, the relationship between people who are playing against each other in a game, is it more heated than it used to be? Is all the politics shed when that game starts? How do you see it?
Well, I mean, I can only speak for myself. Like, I'm a pretty competitive guy, so I want to win when I'm out there, you know, so I'm not... But it's all good natured. I mean, Alex Padilla is a senator from California. You know, he came in to pitch a couple of years ago, and he beamed me. And I said, you know, I said, what was that? And he said, listen, if I was trying to hit you, I would hit you on the first pitch. I go, don't worry, you didn't throw hard enough for it to hurt anyway. Don't worry. And he sent a bottle of wine to my office. So, you know, I think when you go through those common experiences on the field, there's something to bond over and talk about afterwards. You give people trouble. It's like, you know, it's like anything. But people get along. There's no doubt about it. But we're going out there to raise money for charity. But I want to win. Like, I want to go out there and represent Missouri, represent St. Louis, and perform out there. So that's just the competitive nature of it all.
Who's the most likely to perform a hard slide into second? Is that you?
Probably me. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'll take that.
What kind of a glove are you, Senator? You got a glove?
Oh yeah, I got the old Rawlings six finger that I have. Actually, you know what? I'm glad you asked that, Tom. I mowed lawns. I grew up in Bridgeton. I mowed lawns all summer my sophomore year, and bought that glove at a Rawlings outlet mall, the six finger glove. I've taken care of that glove, including my college baseball days. And then whatever has come since. And so I got it restrung. It played against sports a couple of years ago, dusted that thing off. So I've had that glove for a very, very long time. I love the old six finger.
That's pretty cool. The Congressional Sports for Charity was created in 2016. So this is the 10-year anniversary of that. It provides support to worthy and effective charities serving vulnerable children and families in the Washington, D.C. area, as well as scholarships to deserving local youth. These charities include the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington and the Washington Nationals Philanthropies, along with the United States Capitol Police Memorial Fund, in gratitude to the brave officers at the Republican practice shooting on June 14th, 2017. Those are very meaningful, worthy causes, Senator.
Yeah, we had one. We had BP down on the ballpark early this morning at Nats Park, and there's a breakfast afterwards, and one of the scholarship recipients spoke to us, a kid who's, you know, coming from a more challenged background, going to have an opportunity to go to college. And that's what this, you know, you're raising $3 million. So they're setting a record this year with $3 million. Last year, I think it was $2.8 million. So $3 million raised. They sell 35,000 tickets. That's a record for tonight's game, too. So you get a lot of people to kind of unwind, have a good time at the ballpark, and also raise money for these scholarships for kids to, you know, go on and do great things with their lives.
Senator Eric Schmidt is with us on KMOX and is a co-sponsor of a bill called Protect College Sports Act. Ted Cruz, Maria Cantwell are also part of this bill. So this is, there's some bipartisanship here, and this is about collegiate sports. And it's been a bit of a cluster in college sports because of the, you know, players going from one team to another, and there's just so many different transfers and NIL, just created a lot of chaos. So what is the intent of this act?
Well, I think that, look, you guys cover this stuff, and I love it too. I mean, I think college sports, college football in particular, but college sports, college basketball, March Madness, these are uniquely American institutions, things that bring us together, and they're really in jeopardy because the dynamics of everything has changed. Effectively, football, college football financed or subsidized all the other non-revenue sports, women's sports, Olympic sports. I mean, baseball is a non-revenue sport on most college campuses. And so that model's changing, right? So what happens when you're losing money on a college football program or all of your money is going towards that? You're going to start to see a dramatic loss of a lot of these programs across the country. It's just not sustainable. And so what the legislation does, and I think it's very important to point out, it's bipartisan. It has to be. We got to get to 60 votes on the Senate here. And so I've been working with Maria Cantwell, Senator Cruz, you mentioned, Chris Coons from the Northeast also, and we're growing that list. It does two things. It says, well, first of all, the question should be asked, why is Congress getting involved? That's a fair question. And the answer is, we're at a place now, we're at with college athletics, and Congress is the only entity on the planet that can grant antitrust exemption status for the NCAA to enforce rules. Look what happened with the Texas Tech quarterback just this week. You shouldn't be able to gamble and get to play, but the NCAA can't tell him no. A court said you don't have the authority. So it would say, hey, NCAA has authority to enforce the rules on one-time transfer, 5 years of eligibility. You can't gamble. It also has protections for athletes to make sure their scholarships aren't revoked if they're, you know, if they get injured and they have health care in college and afterwards. So those are important things in there. The second piece of it is to deal with the revenue side, right? How can they maybe pool their media rights, these different conferences, and grow that pie to have more money for women's sports, Olympic sports, all those kind of menu of options people have grown to appreciate. There's 500,000 student athletes in this country. And, you know, it's much bigger than, I love SEC football. I love it. But it's much bigger than just that, right? And so there's a lot more play here that we're trying to protect.
Yeah, I could say as an Indiana alum that in jest, I could poke a little bit and say this is because the SEC hasn't been in the national championship game for the last 3 years. and then IU woke everybody up. Was there a tipping point? I mean, was there, I'm not saying it was that. What was ultimately the tipping point where everybody said that's enough?
Well, all these, I mean, you heard Cignetti even talk about that, right? That this is just not sustainable. And I, look, the one part of the landscape that's changed that I actually like is that you have like the Ole Misses and the Indianas and the Mizzous that can kind of rise up and take on the Blue Bloods because you don't have Nick Saban stacking five stars at every position and they can never leave, right? And so there is, so what the bill does is it preserves some of that mobility. You get to transfer one time for free, right? You talk to these college coaches, and I've talked to a lot of them. I've talked to Greg Sankey. I've talked to Petitti. I've talked to all these guys. They just don't believe, and I don't either, that you can have this kind of movement, no rules ever being enforced, somebody going to court to get their seventh year of eligibility or going to the G League and coming back and playing. That's not what college sports has been. So I don't have a problem with players getting paid. I don't have a problem with them being able to transfer, but you got to have some kind of standards here that can be enforced, and that's what we're trying to get at.
So what would the standards look like if you can give a rough outline of it? Because it would have to be nationwide, obviously. It can't be one state has certain rules right, and another state doesn't, because then there you go. There's your competition. That's out the window. So what would it look like if players are still making money?
Yeah, so basically we're at over basically 10 years of litigation that started with NIL and has now gravitated to all kinds of other things to say, hey, listen, NCAA, you don't have the ability to tell a student athlete what they can or can't do. So Congress would say, you can't have the rules. What would those rules be? a one-time transfer. And if you want to transfer after that, the old rules kind of come into play, right, where you have to sit out. You get a one-time transfer, 5 years of eligibility beginning at the age of 19 or when you graduate from high school, which adds some predictability. Because the other untold story here is if you have 26-year-olds playing college football against 18-year-olds, first of all, that's a bit problematic. Second of all, think of all the student-athletes coming out of high school that just don't have the opportunities. Then it creates these additional tiers, right, of like you got to go somewhere else. You don't get to go to a school and start your academic career somewhere. You're transferring more. If you listen to these universities, the graduation rates are affected by this too. It's hard enough to transfer one time. Sometimes the school doesn't have your same major, and there's all kinds of complications. Transferring more than one time really does affect the student-athlete's ability to actually graduate, which still should be important here, right? So it would create a clearinghouse for agents. Right now you're seeing, right, nefarious actors who are giving bad advice to student-athletes to leave. They end up not getting any more money in a worse, you know, program potentially, but they got their 30% or 40% or 20, you know, there's no rules on that stuff either. So this would kind of bring it in to say, hey, there are going to be some rules here. We're going to vet the bad actors. We're going to make sure athletes are protected with health care. We're going to have a one-time transfer, and we're going to have 5 years of eligibility. That will help calm, I think, the seas a lot here. And then again, you got the revenue side to say, if conferences choose the pool, they can. So you could have the Power Four conferences decide that we want to go in together and negotiate with Disney or with NBC for our next deal to help, again, grow the pie. And then as that pie grows, a certain percentage of that is protected then for women's sports, Olympic sports, a lot of the non-revenue sports. So if this actually plays itself out, I think we're going to be, you know, creating a trajectory that's sustainable for the next 50 years in college athletics. If this doesn't happen, 2 years from now, guys, if we're on the Gas House Gang talking about it, I just think you're going to see a dramatic change. Maybe you have 40 programs of the football program, and all these other sports are going to be club sports with no scholarships for people.
So how would this affect coaches? Because, you know, I mean, that's a problem, and there's some unfairness when it comes to an athlete who is committed to a school thinking that coach is going to be there, and then that coach leaves one or two years in. Yeah, Lane Kiffin, right. Or leave in November when the season's still going on, you know? So how would it address that?
Yeah, so there's a provision. There's a provision in the bill that actually has been referred to as the Lane Kiffin rule, that you can't leave before the season's over. And I think there's a designated January 8th is designated as the last day of the season. So it tries to get to a place where the NFL is, where a coach can't leave midseason. It also would fix the portal problem. The portal right now opens up on December 1st. That's before the playoff even, you know, begins in earnest. So there's a calendar problem that is also being addressed here, too, where you'd have more uniform scheduling. It would move the season up probably a week, give you time for a playoff if you want to get to 16 or 24 teams. Eventually, that'll be up to the schools and the conferences to decide, the CSC, all that kind of that's out there. But players will still be able to make money. They'll just be able to transfer once, and you kind of professionalize to some degree the scheduling where coaches just can't leave, take their entire staff with them, and these players are left kind of holding the bag after a great season. So there's been some abuse there that of course has been highlighted by the Lane Kiffin situation last fall.
Obviously there's a lot of interest in this because it is big business. It is climbing the charts very quickly as one of the most watched sports in the country, right behind the NFL. Senator Eric Schmidt is with us. Final thing on this topic, and then we'll let you go because you got to get ready for a ball game. But what is next? I mean, what is the timeline here? What's the next step?
So we had a hearing in the Commerce Committee last week. Nick Saban was there, some conference commissioners, a student athlete was there. And I was just on a Zoom call yesterday with SEC member institutions and Big Ten member institutions, you know, trying to address their concerns about the media pooling issue. Because, look, 67% of all the eyeballs are on those two conferences on Saturdays. Right. And so if they're going to pool, they want to make sure that they're, you know, still doing well. But you want to give these other schools an opportunity so they're not withering on the vine, too. So basically, we're taking a lot of input from, you know, from student athletes, from conferences, from schools, from all the kind of stakeholders this week. And the hope is that maybe next week we could, or maybe the week after, vote it out of committee, get it onto the Senate floor and over to the House before the August recess. So we're here a couple more weeks in June, a couple of weeks in July, then there's an August recess. And then at that point, September will be very important for us because once you get to October, people are going to be back in their states campaigning. It's an election year, right? So we want to be bipartisan. We want to understand and appreciate the sense of urgency there is out there with college football, and also our calendar creates a sense of urgency as well.
And so if it all goes well, this does pass fairly quickly, goes through, which I can't imagine it will because it takes time usually. This is not something that would be in place for, say, next football season, right?
No, it would. Yeah.
Oh, it would, okay.
And in fact, if we did it in the fall, it could help solve the transfer portal problem of being on, you know, December 1st. Now, that's very ambitious if, like, everything went perfectly, which typically doesn't happen here. But, ideally that's what would happen. But our goal is to get this done, you know, as soon as possible in this fall, which would at least help on the transfer portal side and potentially on the coaching carousel that you see. But really, you're right. Like, the next real level set would be 2027, right, as you roll into that year.
Yeah, I can't have Sig working on the portal trying to win back-to-back titles here, you know.
Hey, so. You got your one title. Just calm down. Some people get zero.
Batting second for the Republicans, it is U.S. Senator Eric Schmidt. Congratulations on that. I know that is a great part of your year. And I'm saying congratulations in advance because I know you'll have a good game tonight.
Well, we'll see. I tell you, Tom, we have BP this morning. So my LPS, they tell me, is 1850, which is kind of crazy. But but one of the Democrats, as I was walking off the field, I said, well, I'll see you tonight. And he goes, don't worry, Schmidt, we're going to walk you four times. So I don't know if I'm getting pitches to hit. So
getting the Barry Bonds treatment.
Wow.
We'll have to be patient because that's the hardest part here. You got your family in and 35,000 people. You want to swing the bat, but we'll have to find a good pitch to hit.
Senator, thanks for being with us. We'll talk maybe some local topics about St. Louis sports at another time, and we appreciate you. Thank you.
Let's do it, guys. Thank you for what you do.
You know what we're talking about right now off the air? Who to toast? I think I know who I'm going to toast to Budweiser toasts in the next segment.
Is it a Cardinal?
Yes.
Is he a red? Is he a ginger?
Play 20 questions.
Is he a ginger?
No.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Good.
Because I think maybe we should.
Do you want to just do it now?
We should toast the ginge.
The ginge. You're talking about Dustin?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
Well, it's not just that. The man's been really good since the first two starts.
You know, I'll just do it now. The Budweiser toast, and it's Lars Nootbaar. I think that. I'm not saying that he's the reason why they have turned it on here, but he has been on this team and they haven't lost. And facts are facts. So he joined the team on Friday and they haven't lost since. And I think that it's good for the clubhouse to have a guy who's been around for a little while. He's the leader on the team. He seems like an old man at this point, but he's only 28. And while he's not tearing it up in terms of stats, I think his presence is important. And I think that he is a good teammate. I don't know how long he's going to be here. I don't know if they trade him, if his value is enough where you get a return for him, or if it's in your best interest to trade him. You do have Joshua Baez sitting there waiting to join this outfield at some point. You have Victor Scott II down in Memphis. I'm not sure when he's coming back. You have Nathan Church taking over center field. You got your right fielder probably going to the All-Star game here shortly. This is a good outfield, but Lars Nootbaar makes this team better for a lot of different reasons. And I think having him, and this, not to mention, you know, guys pay attention. This guy has worked. He's been around the team a lot, and he has worked really hard to get himself back to this. I don't know how many people have had Hagelin's deformities out there or have had their heels shaved back. But I'll tell you this, Chris, if I had my heels shaved back, I'd be whining just to go down the hall to get a cup of coffee. This guy made his way back to become a major league starting outfielder. Hats off to him. Actually, beyond that, a toast.
A Budweiser
Lars
toast?
Nootbaar, a nice cold Budweiser. He used to be a Bud ambassador, actually. I wonder if he still is.
Well,
but anyway.
Congrats to him, but do you know what I think you're doing?
What?
I think you're just trying to raise his trade value by giving him the Budweiser toast. Of course you want this guy. He got a Budweiser toast. But I do think...
I'm texting Haim. Just made Nootbaar a... No,
just made you a bunch of assets. Hey, Tom, I'm telling you, we really should acknowledge how good May has been. And I don't mean the month, but the pitcher May... Since the start of the season, he pitched, what, 7 innings total and gave up 13 runs or something to that effect. And it looked like, oh, God, what are we in for here? He's been really good since then, and he's been mostly quality starts. I mean, every start he goes out there, you're looking at six innings and maybe a run, two or three. He's been really good, and I don't know that we acknowledge that enough, and I don't mean you and me. I think Cardinals Nation has not acknowledged enough how good he's actually been.
Well, you know what? I'm going to be like college sports here, and I'm going to change the rules.
Okay.
And the rules are that we can add another toast. So here's another toast.
A toast to Dustin May?
To Dustin May.
I love a good Budweiser toast to Dustin May.
Budweiser toast of the week to Dustin May and to Lars Nootbaar, presented by Budweiser for over 150 years now. This Bud's for you. They just celebrated 150 years. I'm ready for another 150 for them. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're going to go through all of your comments. We'll put them up on the screen, so get them ready now. We already have a load of them in. We had Senator Eric Schmidt, which I know this is a baseball show, but we changed the topic a little bit, and we do have some comments about that. So we'll discuss some of the things he said about NIL, but we'll get into all of your baseball questions as well. Gashouse Gang with Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Go ahead, Matt. I jumped on it. Go ahead. Give it a little love.
And there's a line drive down the right field line. That's hooking towards the corner, and that's a fair ball. Scoring from second is Herrera, and into second is Alec Burleson with his 17th double of the year.
Guy's a stud. He really is. You could make the case that the Budweiser toast last segment was saying goodbye also. I mean, Lars Nootbaar could be traded at the deadline. Dustin May, I think it was kind of the assumption that he was going to get traded at the deadline. So maybe that is a goodbye toast. I don't know. But two guys who've been around, who have made a nice impact for this team that clearly has plans to be young, to be exciting for years to come. And it has all worked out so far.
You know, I know a guy who had a going away party in early January one year, and he left town in April. So that's kind of like what this feels like. If we did a goodbye toast,
we just did it,
and
maybe
they're still here. They're still here for like 6 weeks.
Yeah,
we're gonna have to do it again.
Yeah, maybe. But they've had a great impact. Let's take some comments. I think that's always fun to do. I'm just gonna throw them out there. Dustin May, 6 shutout innings last night. Yeah, it was great. How about Justin Brühl with 2 scoreless innings? Justin Brühl. Let me see. Matt Pauly texted me a stat last night during the game. We love texting stats back and forth. That's what we do.
Oh, that's fun.
We follow baseball. Matt Pauly, Justin Brühl since May 1st, 13 games, 10 scoreless appearances, 13 strikeouts, 2 walks. Is that good? I think it's pretty good.
It's all right.
Yeah. Free Bryson Motz, free Max Ragic, and set Justin Brühl free, says the real third man one. He's not impressed. Tune up the Memphis shuttle. Okay. We'll see. How about, let me throw another name out there. How about Luis Gastelum, my man?
Love that name.
Let's get him in there.
Great name.
Gastelum, Gashouse Gastelum. Let's get him in there. I want him in there.
The Gastelum gang.
Hey, listen, that all Memphis right shuttle, gas it up. Gas it up. It is going to be busy. They will be bringing up players as the season goes along, including Joshua Baez. He's going to make an appearance at some point. That will happen.
Yeah, and I'm okay. Look, if they are patient with him and then maybe a little more patient than they even have to be, I have no problem with that whatsoever. Because the best thing the Cardinals can do is protect, and I don't mean coddle them in a way where they never face any kind of adversity ever because it just isn't possible to do, but I mean protect your best prospects. And that means bring them up when they are ready and not a shred before that. That at least that's how I see it, because that's the position they're in. They don't need a savior right now. They don't need somebody to, and really, this isn't the season for saviors. This is a season for sticking with the plan. So if Baez is proving to you with the strikeout rate and all that stuff that he belongs here and he's forcing your hand, then go ahead and make that call. But I have no problem with them playing conservative on it.
I've been throwing some of those comments out there just so people can see. We're not going to read every single one on the air. KMOX listeners won't know what we're talking about. But Richard wants to know if we think Scott gets to the ball in center that Church on that play that he made, the basket catch last night. I can't say that he wouldn't. I mean, Victor Scott is an elite center fielder. Let's not throw arrows at his defense. He can play some defense. His metrics might not be as good as they were last year, But that guy can fly. I've seen him cover some ground. So, yes, my answer to that is yes. But Church can do a lot of the things that Scott can do, and Church has a cannon, too. I mean, he and Walker out there together, those are some big-time arms out there in center and right.
Yeah, it's a pretty good defensive outfield. It's been that for most of the year. Another messenger, guy watching on YouTube, his name is Ken. He says, great, me, talking about me, has jinxed us with saying they are going to be in wild card contention all season, LOL. He's talking about me, because yeah. I did earlier say I think the Cardinals are going to be in the conversation for the wild card. I don't, unless everybody just completely craps out and, you know, they hit a wall in a big way because got a bunch of young players, which, I mean, that could happen. I just think that we're still going to be entertaining the idea of a possible wild card late in the year. I think we get into mid-September, that's who they're going to be. That doesn't mean they're going to get there. But they're going to be in the conversation, right? I mean, and I'm talking like maybe a couple of games out.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's not unreasonable. They were last year.
Well, they're the number one wild card team right now, and they're three games up on the field. So it's pretty impressive where they put themselves.
And here's what we do know about them for sure. They are way better than expectation. So, and I think you know this already. We could have told you this on June 1st, that the Cardinals are a lot better than what most people projected them to be this year.
Right. I mean, based on what we see, there isn't a lot of regression. The only thing that could derail them right now that injuries. I could see is an injury or two to the starting rotation. That would be bad. We do have a lot of comments about Senator Schmidt, who joined us for a sizable portion of the show, and we appreciate that. There are a lot of them. E-Line always has a good liner and it says if Congress solves NIL and realignment, they should immediately move on to curing traffic and finding Bigfoot. I think that a lot of people... believe
finding
that
Bigfoot.
Maybe Congress has better things to do than try to fix college sports, but I think what I said to the senator is true. I think there's so much money at stake. It's usually what you need to follow in this business is where's the money? If there's a lot of money involved, they're going to get involved, and that certainly is the case. This isn't just college sports and let's have some fun. This is a big business.
Look, billions.
Billions of dollars at stake here.
Yeah, and a lot of states have a lot of interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
That is absolutely why. Let's see if there's any others. Here we go. Pac Pat wants to know how many wins we think the Cardinals will end the season with. Well, they're going to end up with more than 69.5, which was the Vegas over-under to start the year, which I think my answer was over. Well, I know it was over, but I think I said reluctantly I will say over. So I was pessimistic that they could have this kind of a year, but I was very careful not to throw expectations out there. Now, to answer your question, how many will they end the season with? Geez, I don't know, 84?
So that's where I'm sitting is better than 500.
Yeah.
I don't think we're not talking about a 90-win team or anything like that, but 82, 83?
Yeah, I'll go 80.
And it still might be good enough to get a wild card.
I'll say 84 and 78. They go higher than that. Hats off to them. They might. I mean, sure. Who could deny him now? Thanks for joining us. The Gas House Gang, always fun. Hey, go to OzzySmithGolf.com. I'm doing a roundtable at Busch Stadium to benefit PGA Reach Gateway with Ozzy, Vince Coleman, and Willie McGee on Saturday.
Oh, my gosh.
It's going to be
incredible.
There's
my childhood, buddy.
It's going to be incredible. It's for PGA Reach Gateway. OzzySmithGolf.com for tickets.